You may be seated. There's an older movie called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and I really liked that movie. And then they had a remake, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Has anybody not seen either or doesn't know the story? Can you raise your hand if you... Okay, there are some. So in both of them, it's the same story. Willy Wonka has a chocolate factory, and it was a good one, and then they closed the doors, and no one ever got to go in for I don't know how many years. Then all of a sudden, he comes out with this plan to give out 5 golden tickets, and if you get the ticket, then you get to go into the chocolate factory, and it's like a really big deal. I mean, people are buying millions of chocolate bars to find the golden ticket inside of it. And so that's kind of the main idea. Charlie Bucket, he gets one of the tickets. And his family is very poor. And so he needs, it would be good if he sold it for money. And his grandpa tells him this. He says, "There's plenty of money out there. They print more every day. But this ticket, there's only 5 of them in the world, and that's all there's ever going to be. Only a dummy would give up this for something as common as money." Are you a dummy? Today we're going to look at money. In many different ways, we give up much of our lives for something as common as money. Now, we are rich. Every person here, you might say, well, in terms of American standards, I'm not. Most of us, or many of us at least, have a car. If you own one car, not 2 or 3 or 4, if you have one car, you're in the top 3 to 5% in the world. 50% of the world's population used to live on $2 a day. In like 1990, and that's really low. And I looked because, you know, statistics, most of them aren't true. And then also things change. And I looked, and I think it's about $5.50 a day now. Half the world lives on $5.50 a day or less, which, I mean, they're living now because that's like $2,000 a year. Yeah. $32,400 income puts you in the top 1% of the world. So, by American standards, you have to make like 700 and some thousand to be in the top 1%. But I'm just guessing, I'm pretty sure actually, that when Jesus spoke these words, he wasn't speaking in terms of American standards or obviously it wasn't a country even at the time, but he wasn't just looking at the people who have it well off. He was looking at everyone. And so if you think about that, if we're in the, most of us probably are in the top 1% of the world, and if you're not, in the top 1%, even if you made half of 32,000, you're still pretty high up there. I can't look at the Bible and say we're not rich. We have opportunities, but likely the greatest barrier between our commitment to God is wealth, is our money. We don't talk about money all the time, and I really don't like to preach about it, but I feel pretty good about this because it's a bigger issue than money. It's a heart issue. 10% of the verses in the Gospels are about money. 16 of the 38 parables Jesus teaches on are about money or possessions. 2,300 verses in the Bible about money. We can't not talk about it. Jesus spoke a lot about it, and I think for reason. We even like to read the Bible and take verses out of context and disregard the idea of money. Like Philippians 4:13, it was always translated, "I can do all things through him who gives me strength." Now they have appropriately translated it, I can do all this through him who gives me strength, because if you read the context, it's about Paul speaking of learning to live in want or with plenty. It's financial. It's about money. Money can be wasted. We can overspend. And money can be hoarded over savings. I think that one might even be harder to recognize. Being rich makes it hard to depend on God. I mean, really, if we have money, we might ask, well, why do we need God for these things? Craig Groeschel said in his book, Weird, he said, "I know some people who are doing so well at managing the resources that not only are they doing fine not relying on God, But also, they've made sure their kids will never have to depend on him either. I don't think it's wrong to save and to give, and it's a blessing to give, and even more of a, or it's a blessing to receive, and even more to give. But are we thinking that this is all for us? See, 1 Timothy 6:17 to 19 says, "Command those who are rich in the present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment." And this isn't like suggest it. He says command them. I mean, we need to command each other to not put our hope in wealth. He says, no, command them to do good, but to be rich in good deeds, to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. So if we aren't blessed to spend everything on ourselves, and if we're not blessed to save everything for ourselves, then why are we blessed? Why are we the fortunate ones that have so much wealth? 1 Corinthians 9:11, "You will be enriched in every way," and here's the answer, "so that you can be generous." Why? He says, "On every occasion, and through your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God." We call ourselves Christians. We follow God. We say we're his disciples. We're the hands and feet of Jesus. And so our generosity gives God credit for what is his in the first place. I mean, when we give, we're not really giving ours. We're giving what God has blessed us with to be able to share with others. It's not all about giving to the church. I don't see your giving. I don't know who gives what, and that's how it should be. But I can do math. The total income for last year was $585,000, but $519,000 came through our 168 regular givers or giving units. And if you do the math, whether you take the big number or the other one, I mean, as a church whole, we're giving anywhere from $250 to $400 a month as a person. And I can only look at the national mean and averages and try to do the statistics and put it all together. And if I look at the national median income or even the county, and then I look at how much we've given from so many people, it looks like as a church we're probably giving about 5%. Now, that doesn't mean every person is. Some might be giving 2% of a lot, and some might be giving 50% of almost nothing. I have no idea that. But as a whole, we're doing fairly well. And so today, I don't really care about the numbers as much as I think that this is about, this text is evidence of our mission. Are we in line with God's mission? Do we believe what we say we believe? So we're in the final week of the Sermon on the Mount series. I just want to do a quick recap because it just goes together so well. So in Matthew 5:20, and I did recap it last week, but some may have missed last week or the week before, so I want to do it again quickly. In Matthew 5:20, Jesus said, "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." That says a lot there. We have to be perfect to be right with God. Well, we can't earn that, so we only get that through our salvation through Jesus, which we looked at some other texts to really see that. But then what he does is he calls his followers, his disciples, to a deeper commitment. These six paragraphs, I'm not going to go through all of them, but it's in Matthew 5. Jesus says, "You have heard that it was said," and that's like, hey, here's what the rule is. But then he goes on, he says, "But I tell you, this is what you should do. This is how you should make the deeper commitment. If you truly are following me, then you're gonna show it. This is how you do it." And then last week we looked at prayer and how this gets us in line with God's will. How when I pray, if I use the model that Jesus gave us, the Lord's Prayer, it will help me to grow in my commitment to following him. This week is, okay, you know what you're supposed to do. You know how to do it. But here's your chance to prove it. Today's the application. What motivates you? Your motivation will determine your spiritual health. There's this story that I want to read that's not our text from today. We're not into our programs yet, to your outline. But I think this story really helps to apply this whole series. So if we're a follower, we're having a conversation with Jesus, and I say, I want to be very committed. I want to follow you. And he says, here's how you do it. And I say, okay, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. This is like that final step, like, okay, now you're going to prove it. It's this story. It says, just then a man came up to Jesus and asked, teacher, what good thing must I do to get eternal life? Why do you ask me about what is good? Jesus replied. There is only one who is good. If you want to enter life, keep the commandments. Which ones? He inquired. Jesus replied, you shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honor your father and mother, and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, if you know the Ten Commandments, there's five, and then also the second greatest commandment of what we read in the New Testament, of love your neighbor as yourself. But notice what's missing. All the commandments that have to do with us and God. Jesus just gets to the point. Instead of saying, oh, you need to read all the commandments, you need to follow them perfectly, he knows the man, he knows his heart, and so he just challenges them. You want to follow me? Prove it. He says, the young man said, all these I have kept, what do I still lack? Jesus answered, if you want to be perfect, go, sell your possessions, and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven, then come, follow me. Jesus says, your idol, it's money. You got to make a choice. I don't know what your idol is, and I don't think he would ask us all the same question, but probably many in being in the country we are with the opportunity, I think for many he might ask the same question. Your idol or me? Prove it. You say you want to follow me? Here's your chance to show it. I don't know if this is your answer to. Put yourself in this story. If Jesus asked you, could you do it? The man wanted to follow Jesus. He wanted to have a deeper commitment. But Jesus challenged him. So I want to jump into our text, and you're going to see how a lot of this plays out now. It's in Matthew 6, 19 to 24. And it says this. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so this idea first of storing up, it's just assumed. We get things, we like to keep things. This is what people do. But this is not referring to accumulation. It is referring to over-accumulating, but not simply possessing. Possessions aren't bad. If you don't save and you don't have anything and someone has a need, then how can you help them? There's nothing wrong with having money to be able to help if you know the point of your money is to be generous when the time comes. See, I really like this one verse that kind of helps to show that it's not just my opinion. But it's actually in Matthew 27:57. It says, as evening approached, there came a rich man from Arimathea named Joseph, who had himself become a disciple of Jesus. So he is a disciple of Jesus, it says it right there, and he's a rich man. He had something to give. So that's okay. Having money is not a sin. But are we storing up for ourselves? Or are we trying to, it says, store up treasures in heaven? Well, what does that look like? I would say the answer is actually in this same Sermon on the Mount, in the same text in Matthew 5, the Beatitudes. If you just look back at the Beatitudes, who are the people who are blessed? The poor in spirit, those who mourn, the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, those who are following Jesus, the committed people who want to live for Jesus and truly do. Well, we help each other. We help to reach out to those people who need to be comforted. I'm not talking about there's two parts there. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Well, we have to do that. If we're actually going to be a Christian, then we got to live this out. Mark Moore said, if all of our possessions are on loan from God, claiming ownership is actually embezzlement. Taking control of God's resources replaces God's rule with our own. When we remove God from his throne, the objects we possess become idols that possess us. This is too real. It says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will also be. We know this. What we put into, what we invest in, our hearts follow. When I was in high school, I went to a shooting camp, a basketball shooting camp, not gun shooting, but basketball shooting camp my freshman year. And the coach sent me there, so I thought that meant he was telling me I'm really bad at shooting, so I need to go. But he sent some other guys who were pretty good. I think that was just to make me feel better about myself, because they already knew how. But I remember it was really good. The whole week was just about shooting. And I remember the note that I got that was, this will be most helpful for you. And it was, when you shoot, make your arm go up more. All right, my shot was too flat. It was going like this, and the ball was kind of going off the top. And so I just a very small thing, but I remember that he said, just go up more, and you'll have a better shot. And so it was really helpful, and I learned from that, and I coached basketball for 8 years, and I used that. I remember watching a girl shoot free throws, and she kept missing, but she could shoot everywhere else. And I said, what are you doing? And she told me the same thing, the same advice that I got. And so I didn't get it all fixed until after high school, so that wasn't really helpful for me. But I actually can shoot a lot better than I could then, because one day I was playing basketball outside with Coach Dibert, Ryan Dibert. We're cousins, and he coaches, and he does a good job. And he was watching me shoot, and I guess I was missing too much, and I was on his team, so he wanted to help me. He said just kind of very casually and nicely, what are you looking at when you shoot? Like, what are you watching? I had developed a habit that I held on to for 4 years, at least 4 years. When I was shooting, I was so preoccupied or worried about my arm going up that when I shot, I watched my arm go up. I mean, I looked at the basket, and then I just watched my arm go up. And you know what happens? Where you're looking is where it goes. Now, the ball didn't go straight up, but it definitely didn't go in very often. And as soon as I started looking at the rim more, I was able to make a lot more. See, what you're looking at guides you. Where your heart is in life, what you're looking at all the time, it guides you. If you're pulling out your phone and looking at the stock market all day, then you're going to start to treasure money. If you pull out your phone and you look at the ESPN app of sports updates all day, well, you're going to treasure sports a lot. If we're giving 2% of our income to the church or to the advance the kingdom, and we're giving 98% of our resources to the world, then we're probably going to start to treasure the world a little too often. So the question I have is, what do you value? Our mission. Our mission is loving God, loving people, reaching the world. And this first blank, you could probably fill it all in now, your whole outline, is reaching the world. From Luke 12:48, it says, from everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. If God's mission, if Jesus came to seek and save the lost, to share the gospel, then when we've been given something, we should be using it to seek and save the lost and to share the gospel. Is what you say, you're a follower of Jesus, you're a disciple, is what you say showing? Jesus was so generous. He gave his life on the cross for us. He didn't just give a little bit. He didn't just give money. He didn't give so he could be comfortable enough. He gave everything. And so are we able to do the same thing? Not about money, but about our lives. A deeper commitment to God's mission. And I think what Jesus is saying is, prove it. You say you're about this, let's see it. He keeps going on, verse 22, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? So when I read this for years, I always looked at that text, and I thought, okay, the eye is the lamp of the body, and so that means, like, whatever I see would become, that's who I would become. So if I listen to music that's not healthy, then I would, maybe it's depressing and degrading to people, then I would become depressed and degrading to people. And if I watched movies that were too violent, then I would become more of a violent person. And I always thought it was whatever comes in becomes who I am. But as I looked into this more, I don't think that's what it's about. See, in the culture, the time the Greeks actually believed that your eyes produced light. So, like, you didn't need lights. And if you think about it, if you wake up in the middle of the night, your eyes adjust, and it's easier. It reflects, you know, it reflects differently. So we know that our eyes do not produce light, but to that culture, they believed that their eyes produced light. Well, in the same sermon, Jesus says in Matthew 5:16, "Let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds. Praise your Father in heaven." In Judaism, a good eye meant generosity. And so this darkness was selfishness and greed. So what he was really saying is, what is in you, what motivates you, what you value, that will guide you through life. Now, yes, I think it's important to take in good, and we'll become a better person as we continue to take in good things. But I believe this text, he is saying whatever you value, because look at the context, it's all about money, and that's the big issue. What you value will become who you are. People will see it. You will be able to prove it. You'll have a chance, and you will. You'll prove that you're about Jesus and his mission, or you'll prove that you're not. Excuse me. So the next question I have is, how do you see others? As a means of gaining, or as an opportunity for giving? This is the gospel. Jesus made it about giving. Loving people, the second part of our mission. See, being rich makes it hard to focus on people. Things like traveling and season tickets and lake houses and traveling sports, all these things are nice, and I don't think there's any issue with any of them. But if you think about yourself, and I think about myself, when I'm spending time entertaining myself or my family, I'm probably not thinking much about you. Sometimes, if there's big things going on. But the more that I do to entertain myself or my family or just, you know, to have a good time, I'm probably not thinking about you. And that's a problem. There is a time for it, but it can't be all the time. I think just like money, percentages we think about time. How much are we really thinking about other people? Because the more resources we have, I think the harder it becomes. That's why Jesus says it's harder for the camel going through the eye of a needle. Yeah, it's like impossible because the challenges increase. Because even if I had enough money to do everything I want and to be fully entertained all the time, and I had enough money to make sure every need was being met by every person here, if I'm spending all my time on myself, I will not see your needs. We have to keep our eyes open. If we're going to love people, we have to look out for people. We have to be invested and not be thinking about ourselves all the time. And so there's a chance then to prove it. And then he finishes up with this last verse. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And so the question is, who is your master? And this is where it comes into loving God. That's why debt is so tough. We become slaves to the lender. When we say we're not slaves, but really when you take out a loan and you don't pay it back, you have in a way, you've become a slave to that person. And I know we all do this, or many people do this, and it's kind of normal, but it can be risky. As we keep doing this more and more, we take on more and more debt, we become slaves to more and more people, and we can't focus on God and what he wants and his mission. See, Matthew 13:22 really spells this out well. The seed falling among the thorns refers to someone who hears the word. All right, so I think that's assuming someone who hears the gospel and an opportunity to make a decision. And it says, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke the word, making it unfruitful. It's worries. Do I have enough? Am I going to have enough? And deceit. If I get this, I'll be happy. It's fear and hope. Money is tough because it takes the place of God. It can. Control, comfort, pleasure. Why do I need God if I have money? I can get all those things. There's a story in the Bible. It's actually only one verse, but it's a really sad story of someone else. And it's at the end of Paul's life. He wrote in 2 Timothy 4:10, Demas, because he loved the world, has deserted me. I don't know if it was about money. I don't know if it was a girl. I don't know what it was about. But he fell in love with the world, and he gave up the mission, and he left. There's no application today. Today really is an application sermon to this whole series. You make the commitment, you know how to move in that direction, and so now's the chance to prove it. The promises of wealth, the safety, the comfort, the pleasure, they're temporary at best. But the promises from our Father, you are loved, you are never alone. The promise of hope in Jesus, these are the eternal promises. And he says to store up for yourselves what won't be destroyed, what will last forever, kingdom-minded. Set your mind on things above, not below. And Jesus asks another question, and I just love his questions because, most of them are rhetorical. And he says this, what good is it for someone to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit their very self? And it is a rhetorical question. Basically, he's asking, are you a dummy? I mean, really, if you think about that, we know the answer. There's no good in giving it up. It starts with God's gift that he offered through Jesus on the cross, making the sacrifice. And we see that first. Our salvation only comes through him. But then as our faith increases, what that means is as we trust God more, then we make the deeper commitment. We start to show it. And in all areas of life, then we begin to prove who we say we are. You say you're a Christian. You say you're a follower of Jesus. You say you're a disciple. You say that God is your Father and you trust him. Today's our chance to consider all these things and to prove it. Prove it to the world. Prove it to the person who has no hope and has nothing and doesn't know what they're going to do with their life and has no meaning and purpose and they find no value. And you say who you are. Well, do they believe it when they see it? Because if not, it's just a waste. It's just empty words, and they don't believe you. But if we really want people to have the hope of eternity, if we want people to feel valued and loved, then we have to start living out who we say we are. We have to prove it. Let's pray. God, thank you so much for being who you say you are. You are loving, and you are faithful. And you didn't just say it, you proved it by sending Jesus to die on the cross for us and your only son, taking our place where we failed. And so I pray that every person here in life, in all areas of life, would consider how we are living and if people really believe us. Help us to self-evaluate, not to judge one another, but to evaluate ourselves in a way that would help us to share your love with the world. Thank you so much for that love and for Jesus. And it's his name I pray. Amen.